As my little friend Rose says, worry about yourself. You drive.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Hello, this is Rich Hervig with Brightside IT out of Atlanta, Georgia, and you're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast.
Thank you for that intro. I am David Sims of Security First IT and HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cardin. Hello, Donna.
Hello, David. Welcome back.
I know. Back in America again.
Yes.
Wasn't there a song about that?
I remember back in the USSR.
Okay. No, I didn't go there. But anyway.
No, there's I'm sure there's one.
There's got to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm back. I decided to try to stay awake for a solid day and a half to get myself back on schedule. So I arrived back Sunday afternoon, and by Sunday night, I was passed out, and then back to work Monday morning. Like, nothing ever happened.
Wow. Well, you go there. That's more than commitment to the time change than I would ever give. But yeah, I know how to do it to some extent, but a day and a half, no.
Yeah. Well, I had to do something because I knew I was getting in late Sunday and then, you know, back to work Monday. And there's just no way to do it except for some extreme change. So,
yeah, living the extremes. That's David.
Yeah. So,
but welcome back. And I'm glad you got to spend some great time with your son.
I did. And it was fantastic. And Japan was great, too. So I know we have a few listeners who go frequently or have gone and
Or from there or have family there.
Yeah, and it's an experience. There's not many vacations I would say is an experience, but that Japan was an experience. And it's also one of those vacations. Have you ever been on a vacation where when you got back, you were like, okay, now I'm ready to go the next time. I understand what to do now.
Yeah, I know what I want to do this time.
Yeah, you spend your whole vacation kind of figuring things out, and then you're like, oh, okay, now I got it. Now I'm ready. Let's do it again.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally understand. It's, you know, that's what a foreign country is all about, visiting those and learning about the cultures and understanding the big picture of the world. It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Back to the grind, brother.
Yep. Let's get her done.
Neither one of us are in our normal sync, so we'll just have to, you're going to have to suffer through with us today, but we're ready to roll.
Yeah. So there is some talk about the next HIPAA boot camp, but we don't have that determined yet. So we will, you know, other than to say it'll be somewhere and sometime after Labor Day.
Yeah. We're getting a lot of questions and there's just a lot going on. We haven't had an opportunity to sit back down because somebody's been in another country and.
Don't blame it all on me.
We haven't worried about putting it together because he wasn't here. But we did record one time over there. That was fun. And we are going to get back to work once he's really and truly, as he sent me the text, I am back in the saddle. So look forward to that information soon. And I'm also getting in trouble because I am not making a good list of all the places I'm speaking. And that's my bad. So I know I'm speaking in Dalton, Georgia, and I'm speaking in Memphis, Tennessee in September at the Tennessee Ambulatory Surgical Group State something. So I got to get my stuff together on the next episode. We'll learn where I will be. But for now, we're just going to focus on today's topic.
All right. And before we get into today's topic, let's take a break so we can hear from our sponsors. Did you know that 83% of healthcare organizations report a strong negative impact to their bottom line after a data breach? So many doctors think they are HIPAA compliant and have nothing to worry about. Many of those organizations thought the same thing before it happened to them. Call Cardin today at 678-292-5001 so they can assess your practice and help ensure you are protected and prepared. Visit CardinHQ.com to learn more.
Okay, so what's today's topic, David?
We're going to be talking about BA guidance that came out. So talking about specific BA liabilities. So business associates, for those of you who don't know. So there's guidance that came out from OCR, and it's important because it defines, what business associates are supposed to be doing, because for some reason we don't know. And even though, you and I have talked about some of the wrong HIPAA statements that people make, and this list covers some of that. And so today we're going to discuss that announcement and what it means to business associates and their privacy and security programs. And there's 10 of these things, so we have to move quickly because we know we have a tendency to get hung up on at least a couple.
Oh, yeah. No preaching. We'll try not to get on the soapbox. But
I know.
Or rant. But it is very clear. I mean, the whole thing, it's a bullet list, 10 points that they make, and it starts with business associates are directly liable for HIPAA violations as follows. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can't be much more specific.
Yeah. Can you tell me what the means?
The meaning of the.
Yeah.
All right. So let's discuss those 10 points.
All right. So let's jump into number one. Number one, failure to provide the secretary, and that's not the lady at the front desk.
It's a capital secretary.
Yeah, right. So failure to provide the secretary with records and compliance reports. Cooperate with compliant investigations and compliance reviews, and permit access by the secretary to information, including PHI, pertinent to determining compliance.
Okay. Woo. Yeah.
Better have your stuff together, in other words.
Well, and if they ask for it, don't ignore them, because we've heard people ignore them. And don't tell them, we can't give you that. That's proprietary.
Doesn't apply to us.
Yeah, it doesn't. All of that kind of stuff. Because we learned, and we talked about it when we had our visit from OCR at the boot camp, and Allison said, yeah, we actually will, in some cases, investigate the covered entity, which will include us doing an investigation of the business associate.
Mm-hmm.
So it could roll downhill, as they say.
It absolutely can.
Yes.
And, I hope it never does. Ain't nobody got time for that.
I know, right? And you think you're busy until you get one of those. Let me just tell you. And the amount of time that it takes to provide all of the things that they ask for is not a couple of minutes, even if you're organized. And yep. Let's just say that we both know everybody's not organized.
Well, the other thing that people don't realize a lot of times is they don't come up and say, here's a list of what we need, and they just kind of go away. A lot of times these lists come back.
Yeah,
and so
almost
now
always.
Now that you've given us this, now here's some other stuff we need.
It's very rare that you send in one set of answers and you don't get more questions about what you sent in.
Right.
Or a clarification request or whatever, or additional information. So don't think this is a quick one and out. And we're hoping that they're making sure they're stating that, not because they've had problems with people saying they can't supply this information.
I just can't imagine.
I know. I'm not giving that to you.
Yeah.
All right. Number two, taking any retaliatory action against any individual or other person for filing a HIPAA complaint, participating in an investigation or other enforcement process, or opposing an act or practice that is unlawful under the HIPAA rules.
People don't do that. every one of these come into play because it's happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Because they're being clear. I mean, there is the whistleblower element, but they're also saying here, the whistleblower thing and participating in the investigation or other enforcement process. But then opposing an act or practice that is unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't retaliate against them because they refuse to disclose information that they know they're not supposed to.
Right.
And especially since I'm already working on the notes for the next episode, talking about whistleblowers. And, we know that this happens and it applies. So pointing out the law and saying, hey, we shouldn't do this because of HIPAA, it has caused people trouble where they, you're out. you know, you're not doing this then if you've got a problem with doing, you know, violating HIPAA, because we're going to do it.
Certainly people wouldn't do that.
I know, but the fact that they added that part in there is concerning.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that they didn't just say, you know, whistleblowers or, you know, that's concerning. So you got to wonder how often that happens. But know that you have something now to point to if you are saying, I'm not going to do this because I'm not violating the law.
Right. And it may be the fact that people have been asked to do something they knew was wrong, but, you know, they were like, well, why did you do this? Well, because I did it because my boss man asked me to do it. I knew it was wrong, but I didn't want to lose my job. And so they decide to put that in there.
Well, there is that.
Maybe. Just maybe.
It could be. So at least know that if you think that that's going to be your answer, so I suggest you find another one.
Okay.
That if somebody points out that this is a violation of HIPAA, don't tell them you don't care to do what they're told. Because, you know, this right here is enough. All right. Yep. So.
Number three, failure to comply with the requirements of the security rule.
The whole rule, not parts of the rule. The whole rule. Yep.
The whole rule.
Yeah. they didn't say, you know, maybe this or maybe that. Only the passwords of the antivirus, and we don't have to do the security awareness training.
Yeah.
You know, or the number, you know, my favorite is the when you ask the BA what their contingency plan is, and they say not applicable because we don't see patients. Yeah. Okay. Or what is, you know, your plan to be there for us? And that's your problem kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. And, you know, let's remind the listeners as we go through this list that this is for business associates that we're talking about here. So, you know, the IT companies, the law firms, the accounting firms, all these things.
Transcription apply. Companies.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, there's a long list of business associates out there, folks.
Yep. And sometimes we don't get into specifically what applies to business associates, but this episode is all about that.
Well, this is the first time specifically it has been stated in this manner. Mm-hmm. So that is a really good thing. I mean, it's stated in the law and they've said it, but have they done it where it's a punch list? No.
Right.
And some of these might be. Punch in the
face list.
No, I was like punch in the gut, punch in the face. It may be to some people.
Yep.
All right. Failure to provide breach notification to a covered entity or another business associate.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah, how often do you get people to understand? You've got to let the upstream know what happened, no matter how small it is.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can't begin to understand how it will make you feel until it's happened to you.
Yeah.
You know, that somebody else calls and says, hey, I saw your data out on so-and-so's website. And then you find out that the business associate knew about it, but they just haven't told you yet.
Yep. And it's also worth pointing out that that is part of the business associate agreement.
Indeed. It's another reason that we encourage people to change the 60-day notice. You know, that they have 60 days to let the upstream know. And people are like, well, the law says I have 60 days. I said, the law says it has to be at least 60 days, but we can ask for shorter.
Right.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah, this is where it gets fun because then, you know, the covered entity says, I want to know immediately. And then, you know, me as a business associate is going, immediately is not really good.
Well, and you know, that you don't get to decide everything in these, you know, first of all. So you need to let them make some of the decisions, not you. So you deciding, well, we didn't really have a security incident. You know, your business associate agreement says you're supposed to notify of security incidents.
Right.
Pay attention to that. We're not just talking about notify breach. And just know they're aware of that.
Yeah. Yeah. We've had a few clients who are like, can you just not send me this information? I don't really know what to do with it.
Seriously.
And I'm like, well, here's what you do with it. And yes, I'm going to continue sending you this stuff because you have to have it. And they're like, but I don't I don't know what to do with it. I'm just reading it going, I don't understand it.
Well, you know, and that's another, you know, good point is there are cases where business associates do tell the upstream and the upstream says, just don't tell me.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right here, you have something to point to. I am liable if I don't tell you. I ain't taking that on. If it's your problem now, I passed it up.
Yeah.
You know?
And most of the time we're telling them it's more of to let them know, look, there's nothing you need to do other than document it however you're going to document it. But I have to let you know what you decide to do with it from there is whatever you want to do with it. There's no action I need you to take. I'm just saying you had a security incident and we handled it.
And I'm supposed to cooperate with you. So you let me know if you need me to do anything.
But, right.
You know, I'm in for you here.
Yep. All right. Number five, impermissible uses and disclosures of PHI.
Bam.
That's almost like, duh.
Well, but how many times do you hear BA say, well, we don't have to worry about the privacy rule. We're BAs.
Yeah.
That can't, right there, that cannot be true. Bam. Mic drop. We're done.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't understand impermissible uses and disclosures in the security rule. It's not discussed. It says, look at the privacy rule.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know.
And this is where we get into, you know, I like picking on IT providers because I is one. But, you know, a tech doing their job at a doctor's office, they're going to, you know, they're going to be exposed to PHI. If they connect to the workstation remotely, you know, they're going to see it. They can certainly see the patient information on the screen and
report in a database.
Right. They're exposed to it a lot. And of course, I've heard IT people say, well, I'm just not going to look at it. So I guess when it comes up on the screen, they're like, no, my eyes. I don't know. But I mean, yeah, there's an argument I have. I wouldn't say an argument, but a debate often with IT people that aren't aware of HIPAA that much about what does it actually mean to have PHI? And oftentimes it's the argument that we're not looking at it. We're not opening it up and accessing it, even though we have it in our possession.
Yeah. That's assuming everybody's going to do what they're supposed to do. And you are accounting for that in always going right.
Yep. And the other thing, too, is just, you know, you're exposed to a lot of private information, even just being in the office doing mm-hmm. work. So what do you hear? What are you seeing? Who are you seeing? You have to keep all that confidential.
Well, and that this is the example that I use. And it's I loved it. You know, I generally get crickets and a lot of blinking looking at me when I point this out. So let's say your tech is, you know, doing whatever, and they happen to see at the doctor's office a name of somebody they know. Well, mm-hmm. let's say their neighbor, whatever. And the next time the tech sees that patient who is somebody they happen to know, they say, oh, yeah, I didn't know you were seeing Dr. X for your Z locate condition. Didn't know you had that. Now, based on a lot of the training some folks get, that would be fine. Because,
mm-hmm.
yeah. you know, I'm not disclosing or you know, but let's be clear, it is not.
Yeah. Well, you know, I talk a lot about my discussions on forums.
Oh, geez.
So the other day there was a discussion on a forum about PHI and one of the techs who apparently knows HIPAA, and I, you know, put that in air quotes,
yeah.
Says that a name on its own is not PHI. It must include medical information.
Okay.
So to which I responded, you need to understand the 18 identifiers. Here they are. Oh, guess what? Number one. Or number two. I don't remember which it is. Anyway, the name's at the top of the list.
Yeah. The medical information is, it's this doctor. There you go. I got the name from this doctor.
Yep.
Now I know they're associated with that doctor and you're done. Because what if that doctor is infectious disease or oncology or, you know, geriatrics or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Then if they're a specialist, you know.
Yep. And so if you're going to look at impermissible uses and disclosure of PHI, then you should understand what PHI actually is.
Yeah. You know, and yeah, if I just saw a name and it wasn't associated with the doctor's office or any of those kind of things, just randomly somebody's walking down the street yelling out a name, that's different.
Yeah. Yeah. When you see a piece of paper that's an invoice from the doctor.
Yeah. Or it's up on somebody's screen, or it's a claim that's been printed out, or any number of things that it's associated with the doctor's office, it's PHI.
Yep.
And by the way, you have to keep this confidential forever.
Indeed.
Because people don't get that either. If I quit my job, suddenly I can just tell everything I know? No.
Yep.
That's why.
And if a patient decides to waive their... They're right. Let's say they sign something that says, yes, you can email me that document in, you know, regular email. That still doesn't mean that you can violate their privacy and security because they chose to have, you know, that document sent to them. You can send them a document, but that didn't say, okay, now I can start telling everybody stuff.
Right. Well, and that's one. There was a case where a patient detailed out, they were discussing something that happened at a doctor's office in the news. And then, because the patient had said it in the news, then the doctor thinks that they can now, you know, tell their side of the story. Well, they brought it up. No, you're not allowed. You're not allowed. You cannot do that.
Yep.
And there's multiple cases where that's occurred. A recent settlement. There's one long before that one. So this is, you just got to keep your mouth shut forever.
Yep.
Ever. That's why I don't look at names. I don't look at names. If I've got to work with something, I worry about an account number, medical record number, not a name or date of birth. So it's just easier for me. So anywho, that one's huge for all those people that say, I don't have to worry about the privacy rule. That is very, very important. Next. Failure to disclose a copy of electronic EPHI to either the covered entity, the individual, or the individual's designee, whichever is specified in the business associate agreement, to satisfy a covered entity's obligations regarding the form and format and the time and manner of access under 45 CFR 164.524 C2II and 3II, respectively. So first of all, this is why we teach you how to read the law in the boot camp so that you can go look up and see exactly what that says. But, I'm sure this one's aimed more, I don't know, billing companies, clearing houses, and EHR companies than anybody else.
Yeah.
I suppose IT companies could fall in there. If you know, there was a thing that came out from OCR a couple of years ago that said you can't block access to PHI just because somebody didn't pay the bill.
Yeah, and we saw that happen not long ago.
And I think this is taking that, you know, even further because, well, we just talked about release of patient records and how you have to give it to them in the format that they require.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been, you know, two companies get in a fight and they withhold data. You know, I'm not going to withhold the data. I don't have control of the data. Now, I may have control of the machines and you can get somebody else to fix that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not going to come fix it. But it's different if I have the data and I don't let you get to it.
Yeah.
Two different things.
It's almost like ransomware.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You're holding it ransom. But if the CE hosts their data themselves and you don't have any of that hosting and they don't pay you to do support, they can go get somebody else because they have their data. It's not the same thing. Now, if you're preventing them in any way from getting to the data, that's different.
Yeah. However, I have seen some times when the covered entity says, I need my data. And they send like all the charts and everything in separate PDF files.
Yes.
So you get like, you know, 400,000 PDF files.
And that is exactly what is the other flip side of this is if I am leaving your business and you have my PHI, then you need to give it to me. And while this is more talking about patient access, I can assure you it will be used for some of that as well, because it is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they even include a little snippet at the bottom, you know, cause all of these had little footnotes, let me just say. And most of them just reference the law. But this one and one other, the footnotes were very specific. And it said, for example, where the business associate agreement with a covered entity requires it to provide an individual with electronic copy of his or her PHI upon the individual's request, and the business associate fails to do so, OCR has enforcement authority directly over the business associate for that failure.
Ouch.
Yeah. So if you're a vendor and I use your software for making an electronic copy and you don't give me the ability to provide any electronic copies, I'm just saying, pay attention. Pay attention, people. Pay attention.
This is where I'm glad we don't have PHI and have to deal with this one.
I know, right? And, you know, I'm a fan of that as well. I don't.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So number seven, failure to make reasonable efforts to limit PHI to the minimum necessary to accomplish the intended purpose of the use, disclosure, or request. So this kind of goes back to number five above. Do you really need access to everything to do your job?
Exactly. And, you know, that's where a lot of people are like, well, we don't have access to the EHR. You have complete control of the server and administrative control of the server? Yeah. Okay. Does everybody in the office know how to sign in as admin? Well, you know, the password's available if they need it.
Yeah, we have a fairly new client, and they called the other day, one of the front desk people. We can't get this software installed. We need an admin account. And, of course, the call got sent to me because I'm the one that gets to tell people no.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started into my thou shalt not have an admin account.
Yeah, it's more and more one of those questions of, do you understand that you don't have a license to use admin? That's what we need to start telling them. We issue licenses, and if you want to come take the test.
Yeah, that's what we should do.
We'll give you a license that allows you to have admin. But the other part is, you know, we're just like everybody else. You know, security's not convenient, so we all try to limit that inconvenience.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at accounting firms and law firms and billing companies, as well as IT companies, and we're going to have a tendency amongst us to not limit our access to anything just in case.
Right.
You know, so you got a billing company. It's a small billing company. Everybody works for all of the different clients. That's one thing, you know, but it's different if you know they're never going to work for this client over here. Why do they have access to it? Cybercrime is a multi-billion dollar industry and growing. How confident are you that your computer network can withstand a cyber attack? Can you afford to take the chance that what you have today will protect you? Call Security First IT and find out if the cybersecurity in your business is something you should be concerned about, or if you can rest easy knowing your business is protected. Visit them online at securityfirstit.com. That's securityfirstit.com, and schedule a time to talk.
Well, the other part too that I run into a lot is when people are changing providers, whether it's an IT provider or copier provider, whatever, but they tend to leave the access of the previous company. And so now you've got all these other companies running around who have access to your data.
Right. And that has to do with termination situations. So, yes, you've got to make the effort to evaluate minimum necessary, make the business decisions, and document what you're going to do. I just did a lunch and learn yesterday. And we were talking about access to HIEs and the way that that works. And, well, you know, once I tie into this HIE, the patient has the ability to opt out, but by default, they're going to go in. Well, have you told the patients you're going to turn that on? Well, no, because they can opt out. But if they don't even know they're in there, how can they opt out? So, you know, first of all, I've got to do all of those things because now I've opened up a whole new floodgate and I'm going to trust everybody else to do the minimum necessary access and all of those kind of things. So it's that same process over and over. You've got to make a reasonable effort to limit it. Reasonable. Okay. Well, number eight, failure in certain circumstances. I like that one. To provide an accounting of disclosures.
Okay.
And this is the one that freaks most BAs out when they are told they have to do this. That for some reason they don't. Well, let me rephrase that. Most people don't. Even the covered entities don't truly understand that they're supposed to be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And okay, but well, first of all, when it comes to accounting and disclosures, there is some confusion. If you read the high tech provisions, it said that you're going to even include treatment, payment, and operations in your accounting of disclosures. And then when people looked at that, they were like, holy crap, how would we do this?
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, we're talking about a vast amount of data. And it would almost become useless. When you think about studies show that in a hospital, they're going in and out of patient accounts every 8 seconds. Yeah. And you're going to show every single one of those? So they did put out there in their request for comment about, hey, we're kind of thinking this isn't going to work. What do y'all think? But even before then, though, there's an accounting and disclosures that says anything that happens, even if it's not a breach, but it's outside TPO. So I have an incident and I decide it's not a breach. I don't necessarily have to notify the patient, but I still have to keep an accounting of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's down to I sent the patient information to the wrong doctor. I should be able to document that that occurred and that that doctor's office insured us that they had destroyed the information and weren't going to keep it. Because we're allowed, that's an exclusion under the breach, is that it's, you know, it's reasonable for me to assume they're a covered entity. They're going to do what they say they're going to do.
Right.
Yep. But I should have an accounting of that if anybody ever asked. Because what if they didn't?
Mm-hmm.
Well, covered entities don't have it. A misdelivered fax or accessing the wrong patient or, you know, possession of an unencrypted laptop that was not accessed and you can tell that. And, you know, all right, well, fine. That's the same thing. But that's different. But if anybody looked, incidental disclosures, those are the ones that are supposed to be in your accounting and disclosure. And both covered entities and business associates are supposed to have those.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things where if I'm an investigator for OCR and I come in and I ask for this and you're like, oh, I don't have anything.
You know that's not true.
I'm like, there's no way possible you've not had something that comes up that you need to have an accounting of. That right there is kind of like, okay, I need to dig deeper because I know you're not doing anything.
Yeah, I was talking to a let's just say a group at one of those mini conferences that I've been to recently, and they were a small group and they were not fully educated on the HIPAA thing. And we were talking about the OCR investigations and they're like, well, how do they even know that that happened? Well, because you have to tell them. Well, you know, we never have had to tell them. I guess that's why we're not. Wait, you've never even told them about a small one? Well, no. We don't have any. Okay. Have you ever sent a EOB to the wrong patient? Or have you ever sent a statement to the wrong patient? Or sent multiple statements to different patients, all to one patient? Those kind of things. Well, that kind of stuff happens all the time. Okay, then. There you go.
Yeah.
Here's my card. Here's my card.
Oh. Yeah. And that's, you know, that's kind of it. If you have nothing to show for this, then I really question if you're doing anything, right?
Yeah.
Because you should have something. There's no way you're not making some mistakes. And they expect that. And that's why if you have no accountings of disclosures, it's a red flag.
Mm-hmm. Definitely with covered entities. And depending on the type of business associate. So if the business associate is a billing company, you know, revenue cycle management, as they call it today, or a collections firm, they better have that list because you know it's happening.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
All right. That brings us to number 9, failure to enter into a business associate agreement with subcontractors that create or receive PHI on their behalf and failure to comply with the implementation specifications for such agreements. And this is for business associates, right?
That's so, right.
So business associates have to have business associate agreements with their subcontractors that create or receive PHI.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because we know OCR's told us many, many times, the first thing they're going to do if there's a privacy or security issue involving two companies, what's in the BAA?
Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Show us your BAA.
Yep.
And, so, you know, in our boot camp, we teach the business associates that they need 3 versions. I mean, do you see that it's helpful to do 3 versions in yours?
Yeah. Yeah. We do multiple versions.
Yeah. It's. I was in a session that was talking about managing vendors in a secure world, and it was an attorney who said nothing drives her crazier. And when she did this, every part of me wanted to scream, "Preach it, girl!" But the fact that they'll use those templates, and it's the same template for every single contract. So the template says so-and-so is a covered entity and so-and-so is a business associate.
Yep.
So right away, it doesn't match the law. Yeah. So make sure that yours designates people properly. And as a business associate, you would need to have one that's upstream to a covered entity, upstream to a business associate, and downstream to a business associate. And they're all going to have slightly different tweaks.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is, you know, this answers the question that I have often seen with IT companies where they say, well, I'm providing, for example, a backup service. So I'm backing up the PHI, but I'm never touching it. I don't do anything to it. I'm just installing the software. The other company is doing everything else. So why do I have to be in the middle of this?
Well, either if you are the seller, then you're reselling the service. Either the contract is direct, and this is where we get into it at the boot camp too, where we go through different scenarios where I have to know the business arrangement. So if the contract that you sold is with you, then you are committing to providing a service that you are sure meets the business associate agreement requirements. Right. If the contract is directly with the backup company and you're not involved in the mix, then you don't have to be.
Right. So it all boils down to that word subcontractor.
Mm-hmm. There you go. You know, and don't forget, failure to comply with the implementation specifications of the agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, all of the people, what is it? You just sign the BAA and that's it.
Oh, I hear it all the time. Hear it all the time. Drives me nuts.
Uh-huh. I start twitching and I get a little antsy, you know, hold me back.
Well, one of the things that I made a comment on the other day is if I don't respond quick enough on these questions on social media, the more out of control it gets, and then the longer my response has to be because I have to clean up all the mess that happens afterwards.
I know, right?
It's like, oh my goodness. So I told the guy that was the moderator for the group, I was like, just send me these questions first because I don't have time to clean up all the mess that happens afterwards.
It's so much easier if I just know in the beginning.
Right. I just want to address the one question at the beginning, not everything else that was misinformation afterwards.
Well, I definitely, you know, it is one of those things where you hate it that there's a discussion anywhere in a social media scenario, and when I, you know, I speak and say something, the discussion's done.
Oh, this happens to me like every single time.
I know.
Every single time. Once I respond, the conversation stops.
Yeah. At least tell me thank you.
I'm glad I'm not the only one that has that phenomenon happen.
And this happens in discussions about business associate agreements and what's required. Mm-hmm. And for me, you know, the number of times that people are like, well, will you just do the contract for us? I am not a lawyer.
Yep.
You know, but I can read a contract and say, boy, this one's not got the stuff I would expect to see. Or, my goodness, this is protecting them and not you at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I do say it just like that. Oh, my goodness. This is not protecting you at all.
Yeah.
You can hear me doing that, right?
Yeah. Well, we could honestly do an entire show. Matter of fact, we have on business associate agreements.
I know.
But
maybe it's time for a new one.
Yeah. But, we'll mention a couple other things here in this particular subsection. But, you know, the other thing, too, is making sure the business associates keep in mind that, you know, they have to use the most stringent requirements as part of their policies and procedures. Because if I've got, you know, 50 clients and the business associate agreements are a little bit different for all of them, or at least some of them, then I have to have my policies and procedures aligned with the most stringent one.
Well, and sometimes you don't, you know, and you usually see in these negotiations, you know, whoever has the biggest stick, mm-hmm. if you will, is the one that is going to be able to direct the contract, you know, and as you've told them before, you've shared that you can get the larger companies to change parts of it, but we know we're not going to get Amazon to negotiate contract deals.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was able to do that with a company, and I guess I had made a legitimate argument about the wording, and I was like, I probably would have signed it either way. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely one of those that's like, look, I need something a little more specific. You telling me you're going to notify me within a reasonable time frame doesn't tell me anything. What are you considering reasonable?
Yeah, I know. Let's define that.
Exactly.
Because that's just a big loophole waiting to be used. So.
Right. Yep. So fortunately, they did change it. But, you know, the other part of it is it makes it difficult when you're dealing with something like notification of breach. And if I've got one company that says notify me in 3 days, another one says notify me in 10, another one that says notify me in 15, I got to keep track of all that.
Yeah.
And then when you look at stacking that on top of what some of the state requirements are, you know, they might tell me you can notify me in 20 days, but the state law requirement says 10. Well, I'm violating state law if I do what the client wants me to do.
Well, yeah, you have to take the time to do something a little different for each one and know quickly when you have an incident, which is, you know, the last thing you want to do is figure out who you got to talk to and when. You want that information available.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking with the startup guys it's PHI Flow or FiFlow. Mm-hmm. That they're building a system that, you know, it reads, the program reads the BAA that you feed it and finds all of the important conditions automatically. It's pretty slick. You've seen it.
Yeah, yeah.
And shout out to Greg and Jason. You know, not too bad for a couple guys up in New York City.
New York City.
That's right. But their tool is pretty slick, and you can even try it. You can run like 25 contracts through it as a trial,
yeah.
You know, and some small groups, that's enough. A covered entity, may not have more than 25, but.
Yeah, but it actually does what I was talking about. It actually looks at the state laws and mm-hmm. compares and lets you kind of see if they overlap and if you've exposed yourself. Not that I would expose myself, but. Does make that comparison so you can see if you're okay.
Well, and it tells you the number of days, it tells you any of the specific, you know, there's a list of specific things it looks for, and it tells you if they're not signed, hello, they're not countersigned, then you've got another problem.
Right.
So it's a really cool tool. You should check it out. You know, a CE doesn't have it as bad as a BA, but a bigger CE may find it helpful. Mm-hmm. So check those guys out. We'll have a link, but it's PhiFlow. PhiFlow.
PhiFlow.co. Tell them Donna sent you and you won't get anything.
There goes my special.
We have no sponsorship yet with them, but hey, guys, maybe you should think about it.
That's right. Give us a little something. All right. So,
drum roll, number 10.
Oh, we're down at number 10. Wham! Whose turn is it?
It's you, babe. Jeez.
All right. Failure to take reasonable steps to address a material breach or violation of the subcontractor's business associate agreement.
Ooh.
Bam. You can't say, not my problem, not my business.
Mm-hmm.
And this is another footnote thing that they added. And this one is very specific. A business associate is not in compliance with the standards in 164.502E, which is privacy. Let's point that out. 502 means it's privacy. And this paragraph. If the business associate knew of a pattern and activity or practice of a subcontractor that constituted a material breach or violation of the subcontractor's obligation under the contract or other arrangement, unless the business associate took reasonable steps to cure the breach or end the violation as applicable, and if such steps were unsuccessful, terminate the contractor arrangement if feasible.
Yep. Get him out of there.
Yeah. So what they're saying there is you need to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are complaining about what their upstream isn't doing. We hear a lot of that. But, you know, as my little friend Rose says, worry about yourself. You drive. If you're doing your job and documenting what you're doing, then you're protected from your upstream failures, but you're not protected from your downstream failures.
Yep. That is true.
Yeah.
And we see that often when, you know, a CE will hire an IT company that doesn't know anything about HIPAA and they're not doing anything right.
Mm-hmm.
You got some liability there, bro.
Yeah. Brah.
Brah.
Brah. You got it, man. I love how they're now this surfer thing. Brah. Hey, brah. You know. Everybody's got to be a little different every generation.
Yep.
But if your downstream is slack and you know about it, just saying, And by the way, it's not better to not know, because either way, that failure is going to, that floats uphill, unfortunately. Yeah, it floats. It doesn't roll.
That's some crap right there because it floats.
That's the thing about this stuff. It floats. It goes uphill. And to say that it's the covered entity's problem is not true. If you're in the midst of that role somewhere, it applies to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we're watching a major breach that may, well, it's more than likely going to have a lot to do with what we're talking about here, as well as the Med Informatics engineering settlement, which came out, you know, a few days before this did. And what you're going to see is this is American Medical Collection Agency. Collection Agency makes them more than likely a BA.
Correct.
At the end of May, they announced they had a data breach that said a hacker had been roaming around their systems that had, quote, personal data, including PHI, beginning in August 2018, and they found them in March 2019.
That's a long time right there.
Yeah, Yep. And we often point out that it takes a long time to find the hackers, you know, and statistically, it can even take hours.
Yeah. That's if you're looking.
Well, you know, and so there's a lot of questions about how it wasn't found. And remember what we just went through in the last episode about the state requirements for a SIM and all this other stuff at Medinformatics Engineering that were in the state corrective action. That's the thing. State. And not even the HIPAA stuff, like you pointed out earlier. The states are coming down on this stuff. Well, what happened next after that breach announcement came out? Quest, LabCorp, and BioReference combined have made announcements of 20 million patients impacted by that breach. And we don't even know if that's the end, because if you go to the website, I think AMCA says, or AMCA, they say that they have like $1 billion worth of collections or something. And, you know, that between when we're recording this and when it comes out, there's probably going to be some more.
I think Roger's getting his big juices.
There's already over 10 lawsuits in play. Senators have launched inquiries and requested information. Several states' attorney general's office have gotten involved. Okay, remember all of that. Well, we just talked about the states. And here's one of the things that I noticed in the news. Was Quest announcement said that AMCA was not their direct BA.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So Quest says in their announcement, they contracted with Optum 360 for revenue cycle management services, and Optum 360 contracted with AMCA for payment collection services.
Hate to be in the middle of that one.
Now, who's going to be blaming who?
I don't even know if you got any fingers to be pointing.
I know. So we're going to be watching this one closely, and this, you know, it'll take years now. So here it is, 2019. We'll probably see the resolution to it in 2021, 22, something like that. We're still doing this.
Don't freak people out. Look,
I know.
We published the episode about we're shutting it down and people went into panic mode.
I know. We've got a huge burst of downloads on that one episode. And nobody sent us a bunch of crap for it, but we've heard from people when we see them. You scared me. So, we were looking for a bunch of crap on it, but hey, we thought we were funny, and apparently it was not funny to others. But yes, I get to do another victory lap on this one. That whole point that the discussion here about addressing the downstream, you know, your subcontractors, because if they're saying that the violation of a subcontractor's business agreement, that means the covered entity to you is the same thing. So worry about yourself. And just as I predicted, the supply chain is a big thing.
Oh, yeah.
Big thing. But they did throw out a final bit that also is directed at item 6. And it specifically revolves around payment of patient access to records, that whole big thing that we've been talking about. And there's big names like PsyOx, and there's a lot going on in this arena. But what they pointed out is, by contrast, OCR lacks the authority to enforce the, quote, reasonable cost-based fee limitation against business associates because the HITECH Act does not apply the fee limitation provision to business associates, only covered entities. So a covered entity that engages that business associate, they're responsible for the limitation on fees. But they can't go, OCR can't go to the business associate that's one of these release of information business associates and say, look, this is in excess of what you're allowed to charge, so you can't charge it.
Right.
So check that one out, follow that one, because there's a lot going to happen with these release of information companies. Because, you know, I'm just saying.
I see a business opportunity here.
I know. Well, you know, the thing is that I don't know what's going to happen to those businesses. Their business model assumes that you can charge for these things.
Yeah, I know.
And they were, and I was like, what are y'all going to do about, you know, the limitations on patient releases? Well, we make our money off of releases to attorneys and all these other things. Well, guess what? We just talked about in episode 199 how no one's using that old authorization anymore. Right. They're all using the patient request to use this fee limitation.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. We're done.
Things are a-changing. Yeah. Oh, by the way, let's mention this. This is pretty cool. There's a new app out called Podcoin, and you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So you can download the app. You can use the code, help me. And you automatically get 300 coins when you sign up. And of course, you know, you're not going to be able to retire off this money. But, you know, over listening to us for a while, you know, you might get enough to get a cup of coffee or donate to your favorite charity. But that's pretty cool. Go check it out. Podcoin. You can find it in an app store of whatever phone flavor you have.
iOS, Android. Just search for the Podcoin app. You sign up. And when it asks for the code, you say, help me. Because you're getting it from Help Me With It.
Yeah. So I just thought that was a cool way. I mean, if you're already listening to the podcast, why not get some other benefit from it? So, you know, cool deal. So,
okay.
Very good. That is our show for today, folks. Remember to follow us, share us out on the favorite social media site, rate us in our podcasting app. We need your help to spread the word. And as always, for Donna and myself, remember that HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me With HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grindle and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grindle or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.